Aloha.
Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, yeah. I've always been everything other than who I am. I don't wanna lie and live another day in this disguise. I wanna risk it all to be true. Would you break my fall if I come through? I can't find the words I need to say.
Song that you just heard just a few seconds of is called Alone in the Trenches, and it's performed by Asera Tuwalo, my guest today. Asera was known for many years as an NFL football player, and I actually saw him on television in 2002 coming out nationally on the Diane Sawyer Good Morning America show. I was channel surfing, I was in Aspen, and it hit me like a bolt of lightning because I was managing Gay Ski Week in Aspen, and I was looking for a celebrity guest. And his story was one that touched my heart. He talked about being suicidal and being very troubled during the years of being a professional football player, that despite the fame and the money and all the success that comes with being in the NFL, he had a dark secret, and that was that he is gay. And Asera, welcome to my program. I am so thrilled that you're with us today because you're one of the people that have really inspired me over the years.
Ah, aloha. And thanks for having me on. It is a privilege and an honor to be on your radio show.
It was so much fun back when we did that Gay Ski Week, because I had to actually examine my own stereotypes, and it wasn't about anything related to being gay or not. It was that when you first told me that you were a singer, and I had a stereotype that football players, you know, perhaps didn't have musical talent, in all honesty. And then I heard you sing Lady in Red, and I heard your CD that you had out at that time, and I was blown away. And subsequently, you really hit it out of the ballpark when you performed there at the top of Aspen Mountain when we did that fundraiser for a scholarship in memory of Matthew Shepard, and we had Judy Shepard there. So thank you again for doing that back then, because that was a big step out of your comfort zone.
Well, it definitely was a step out of my comfort zone. And I tell you, when I got invited to Gay Ski Week, and it was one of those things that I've never been invited to any type of gay event or organization, it was just amazing because it was the first time, basically one of the first times, that I was able to be myself and walk, and travel to Colorado and have a fantastic time, and just being out and free and, living in your truth. It was absolutely an amazing time, I really want to thank you guys and, the Master Shepherd Foundation. It was just so much fun.
Well, and the other aspect that a lot of people don't know that I think was very powerful of that week was that you wanted to speak to high school kids in the Aspen region, Roaring Fork Valley, about being gay and that it was okay to be an athlete and be gay, that those aren't mutually exclusive things. So let's start back at the beginning. You grew up in Hawaii and the eighth child of Samoan immigrants. You came from a very large family and grew up on a banana plantation. What was that like growing up there? Did you have any images of, you know, was there anything in the environment that, that you know, kind of tipped you off that you might be gay? Or, you know, what was that like growing up in Hawaii?
You know, being the youngest of eight children in a Polynesian family, you know, a lot of people would, you know, probably think that you get spoiled, but that's not the case. and, you know, we definitely didn't get spoiled being the youngest in a Polynesian family. I guess, you know, I also grew up a Pentecostal Assembly of God. And so growing up, as you know, in Hawaii as a child, religion was a huge part of my life. You know, did I know that I was gay when I was, you know, younger? No. What happened was I saw some of my friends and what they were doing. They were teasing this kid on the playground, and they were calling him names, and they're throwing rocks at him, and they're calling him names like Sakalati, Saafafine, Mahu, and those are all like, and that's, those are called, that's gay, in the definition of that. And you know what, when I saw that, Brenda, it was like one of those things, and you know, I asked my friend, what, you know, why are you doing this? And he said, well, he likes playing with his sister stuff, that he likes boys, that he, you know, that he's gay, he's Fakalati. And what, that is the day I tell everyone, that is the day when I took that child within me, the child that we have within all of us, and I threw him in the closet. Because you know why, Brenda? I wanted to play with my sister's, you know, stuff when she wasn't looking. I wanted that easy bake oven that I never got. but it was one of those, you know, but it was one of those things where I saw a little bit of myself in that child, that kid that they were beating up and spitting on and throwing rocks at. So that is the day I threw that child in the closet, and that is the day I became an actor, because I became bigger and stronger and faster, so no one would know that the Sarah Tuaola was gay. And as the years go on, you know, you really don't know the definition of it, and then you hear the word, and then it's like one of those things where, you know, you figure it out, and instead of, you know, growing up and having a crush on a girl, you have a crush on a boy. And then, you know, you find out what the definition of the word is, and then what you hear on television and what you see, well, we didn't have a television back then, but what you hear on the radio or what you see just around you, that, you know, anytime the topic of homosexuality would come up, it was always used in a negative way, even in my family, you know, calling, you know, each other fags or, you know, or things like that. And it was always never a positive image. It was always negative. So, and not only that, also at church, the preacher would preach about homosexuality and how we were abomination and how it was bad to be gay, and what we should do is repent and ask for forgiveness and so forth. So as a young child, seeing all of that and hearing all that, God, there's so many times where I would run back home and I would just drop to my knees asking God to take this curse away, the curse that this pastor just said. And the way he made it sound like, well, it would be so easy. All you need to do is just ask. So that's what I did for most of my childhood. But you know what? It didn't happen. You know, and, you know, one thing, but I can tell you this. One thing was so positive about growing up in the religious family, especially a Pentecostal Assembly of God. You know, I always tell people it's the Hallelujah Church. Every Sunday, all the youth had to memorize scriptures, different scriptures, and you couldn't, you know, every Sunday it had to be different, and you couldn't use the shortest one in the book, which was Jesus wept, or else you would get slapped in the head. But it's like one of those things where I read the Bible, and what I found, Brenda, is I found God's love. And what I found, Brenda, I found that in the Bible it says, don't put your trust in the flesh, because the flesh will fail you, but put your trust in God, because he will never fail you. And I think as a young child, when I read that for the first time, I just, you know, instead of putting my trust in people around me and putting my trust in the pastor, what I did is I put my trust in God. You know, and then I read further and further and further, and just gained a bunch of this knowledge of what God's love is all about. And I tell you, it definitely saved me. It saved me. And so, you know, growing up, you know, we talk about growing up in such a, you know, Polynesian family, and then also growing up, you know, finding out that I was different and gay, it really took a toll on everything, because that is, you know, like I said, that is the day I threw that kid in the closet, and I never really brought him back out until I was an adult.
Wow. And so you talk about being bigger, stronger, and faster, and you were. You were very successful winning a football scholarship to Oregon State University in 1991, and at the age of 22, you became a defensive lineman for the Green Bay Packers. What was that like? You know, that was like a big breakthrough. You're the only one from your family to go on to professional sports. Must have been an exciting time.
To go to school itself, to get a scholarship was you know, what a lot of people don't realize and stuff. I grew up in a very poor family. And, you know, but, you know, my parents, they made do. And it was one of those things where I think they did a fantastic job, my mom realized, you know, making us realize that we weren't poor. You know, there's so much stuff to do. There's so much things that we did as a young child. I think, you know, having an opportunity and stuff when I to go to college was a huge step, you know, for me. But, you know, it came with the price, and the price was this crippling secret that I was hiding inside. And so, you know, going to college and getting a scholarship, and there was something for me to lose, you know, especially living in a times where we, you know, no one accepted us for who we truly were. And it was many sleepless nights. It was many depression, you know, in my life. It was a lot, you know, I went through some depression stages in my life, suicide. Anxiety attacks, blackouts, because I was so afraid that somebody would find out, you know, that the Sarah Tuaola was gay, and like my scholarship would be taken away. You know,
I was just going to say, what was it like in the locker rooms when, you know, the guys would come in and talk about their conquests over the weekend, or, you know, this woman or that woman, because they had access to pretty much any woman that came along, and they had money and they had privilege.
Right.
What was that atmosphere like? Describe that atmosphere.
Well, you know, it was very, you know, tell you the truth, it was very, for me, it was difficult just hearing a bunch of that stuff. You know, two parts, you know, one, because, you know, it's very degrading to women. You know, I love my mom and my sisters. And to hear somebody like talk about another woman, like in that source, I thought it was just disgusting that they would do that. But that was part of the nature. That was part of the atmosphere of that, what I was living in. But on the other side and stuff, it was like wishing that maybe, you know, there's sometimes when you live in the closet and you live with all of this anxiety and pain and all of that, you just kind of sometimes, it would be so easier and stuff if I was straight, right? And that I could, like, fall in love with, you know, some woman and create that type of, you know, that love and go forth. But it was like, you know, I couldn't do that because I was gay. But, you know, it was very hurtful because I would, you know, not only them, you know, the conquest, but then also seeing a lot of my, you know, my former teammates or my teammates at the time, you know, coming in with their wives and their girlfriends and, you know, seeing, you know, how much in love that they were, or even their flat families, because and myself being alone and wanting that, but really couldn't have it at the time. And so that's, you know, that's another, you know, part that really took me into that depression stage, you know, because I wanted that. This is what I want. I was the youngest of 8 children in the Polynesian family. I took care of all my brothers and sisters' kids. And it's like, I wanted a family so bad, but I wasn't willing to pay the price. And, so I mean, it was difficult. It was very, very difficult, you know, just seeing all of that.
And what did you see in the 1990s when you were playing professional football? Did you see other athletes were there any athletes at that time coming out in any sport, or, I mean, did you see or hear of any other athletes that came out? And
no.
What was that?
I'll answer that really quick for you. No.
Absolutely, yeah.
Absolutely not.
It's only been in recent years that more and more athletes are coming out, and I think we both wish for a day where it's a non-issue. And, you know, luckily with celebrities like Ellen and different people that are singers perhaps or entertainers, that, you know, more and more images of positive gay role models are coming out on television and movies. And has that have you seen that change? I was going to say, have you seen that change radically?
You hit it right on the nose. I mean, it's one of those things. It's the images and stuff, and the images that we see today on television and radio and here on the radio is definitely helped. Back when I was playing, or back in the days when I was younger, we never had any type of those images. You know, growing up, we didn't have the Will and Grace, we didn't have Modern Family, we didn't have the Ellens, we didn't have Rosie O'Donnell, we didn't, you know, it was one of those things where we didn't, I didn't have anyone to look up to. Definitely, the media has played a huge role in creating a different environment for our community. And, you know, it's amazing to see gay positive role models on television. Gay programs on television that is very uplifting and educational for our community to educate other people. It definitely has made a change. In the NFL world, back when I came out, you know, it was one of those things where it was hush-hush and they just wanted to sweep it under the rug. Now, you know, with times changing, it's very much for me rewarding to see that you know, every time someone lashes out in the NFL where they call another player a fag, or a coach makes a comment of saying faggot or homo, or using that those words in such a negative term, they're held accountable for it. And I love that. I love that society now has realized and stuff that that's wrong. You know, it took us a while to get, you know, to figure it out, but, you know, it is, times are changing. And I think because of the media and what they portray, and because of what people are standing up for, and realizing that, you know what, to degrade another human being is wrong. Degrade another community is wrong, especially when it has nothing to do with you.
What's the NFL stance now? Have you been working with them to change their policies and have more diversity training for the team members?
You know, I was able to speak to the Rookie Symposium 6 years ago, and it was an amazing time for me to get there, and it was awesome. You know, it was great to be among the top athletes in the country, and to just tell them my story. I never got invited back. So, but I have just had the honor and the opportunity to sign on with You Can Play. Patrick Burks has brought me on board to be the liaison for the gap, or to build a bridge between the NFL and their organization, You Can Play. And I'm so super excited about that, because it gives me the backing of an organization where we can go in there and educate to educate people. And it's going to be an amazing time. And I'm so excited to move forward towards that. Not only that, but also I am I'm going to be working with the religious part of it, because in the NFL, hip hop, religion goes alongside with each other. And it's in our community, I think it's one of those things that we need to address and we need to bring to the forefront.
Wow. Well, let's talk about the book, because you just came out recently with a book called Alone in the Trenches, and it's an account of those years that you describe as being out of the wilderness, basically keeping that secret, playing professional football. How long did it take you to write the book, and why did you decide to tell your story?
You know, it was there was never a plan to write a book, because I was thinking to myself, wait a minute, I'm only 35 years old. Why should I be writing a book about my life? But after coming out back in 2003, I have to tell you, it was the messages and the emails that I got from so many people telling me how my story has influenced them, or how my story has helped them, and how my story is definitely going to help our youth today by just me telling my story on television and so forth. So I was approached to write a book. And at first, I said no, because to bear all like that is definitely something that maybe you have to really think about. And, it's not nothing. I mean, especially when you write about your life, and if you're going to do it, you better do it the right way. Right. I mean, you got to bear it all. And so it took me a while to decide that I was going to do it. So I did, and I signed with Source Books out of Chicago, and what I did is I had a ghostwriter. Rosengren was my ghostwriter. But even at that, having a ghostwriter, it was so difficult to tell somebody your story. And it was a huge process, and it took over a year to write, and opening all those doors that I had closed for all my life, in here, I bear about getting abused and used, and also being molested. And so it's everything, it's everything from when I was a childhood growing up to my time, when I came out. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I think by bearing all, being vulnerable and sharing those things, it gives other people strength and courage and permission to share their secrets, because we're only as sick as our secrets, and our secrets will kill us. And I mean, secrets lead to addiction and alcoholism and drug addiction and all kinds of terrible things, because we're not living in our own beautiful integrity, our own beautiful authentic self that is divinely created. I mean, I believe we are all made in God's image, and we are all beautiful and in our own divine way. So many people have experienced sexual abuse as children, and have witnessed alcoholism in their families, and so, and yet no one talks about it. But the more we talk about it, and that's one of the things I love about people like Oprah and other people that bring these issues to light, to say there is, there are these issues, they can be, you can overcome these issues, you can get the help, you can get the resources, and you can help other people, give them hope. So by you sharing your story, it helps other people say, you know what, look at what he's gone on to accomplish. This doesn't, my story doesn't need to define me and limit me. So I think that's very powerful, and I commend you for having the courage and the honesty to come from that place of truth, because that gives other people permission.
I think, it's hard when, you have to be vulnerable, and you have to just kind of bear it all. And especially, definitely, it's amazing to get it all out there. It's amazing to, to wear your heart on your sleeve. But there's always that. But, the platform that I was given, so basically the whole world would read it, and it's like, do you want that? And and you're right. And you don't realize that it's going to help people until you write it and it's out there, and you get the swamps of emails and of encouragement, it's amazing to go out or to, when I travel, and have somebody come up and say, your book saved my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's and it's like one of those things where I just, I am, sorry,
I'm going to take a quick break here, because we need to do a station
identification. Yeah, take a quick break, because I'm going to cry. So,
take a quick break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Live to Thrive. My name is Brenda Fraser, and my guest today is Asera Tuwalo. We'll be right back in just a couple of minutes. Stay with us.
Hey, what's up? Holla at your boy. XOXOXO. You getting these tags? Question mark. Where are you? What are you doing? OMG, you are making me mad. You better text me back. I'm waiting outside your house.
Relentless, aggressive texting is like sending an angry robot to deliver your message. When does the robot become dangerous? Let us know at thatsnotcool.com.
Thatsnotcool.com.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Wow, that is great.
We're open for business. The Greater Good Ministries Book and Gift Shop is now open for business, featuring metaphysical and uplifting books from your favorite authors, such as Doreen Virtue, Wayne Dyer, Michael Edward Owens. We've added handcrafted one-of-a-kind jewelry, pendants, earrings, and bracelets, and now have an exclusive selection of crystals, rocks, and stones for your metaphysical toolbox. Take a look at our hand-dug Arkansas crystals, imported Brazilian crystals, Tibetan crystals, and Reiki healing stones. All of our rocks, crystals, and stones have been Reiki infused, blessed, and cleared, ready for use. You can reserve your copy of Crystal Healing 2012 and Beyond, Reverend B's new book, A Comprehensive Guide of Rocks, Crystals, and Stones for the New Age. Visit ggmradio.com and click Bookshop in the menu bar. That's ggmradio.com. You're listening to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser on GGM Radio. And now, back to the show.
Hey, welcome back to Alive to Thrive. My name is Brenda Fraser, and our guest today is Asera Tuwalo. And we've been talking about being gay in professional sports, coming out and telling your truth. Asera wrote a book called Alone in the Trenches, which is a fantastic new book. It's available on Amazon and on his website. I want to make sure people do get that. There's a way to get an autographed copy. Asera, tell us how to get an autographed copy of your book.
Aloha, how are you?
Hello.
We will be posting a link on your website and then also on my Facebook. At this time, currently, I am rebuilding my website, so it's not available.
Okay.
We are going to be putting a link onto your website and also to my Facebook. If anyone wants to friend me, it's Asera Tuwalo. So
that's Esera and then Tuwalo. You can send them a Facebook friend request, or it's also on facebook.com/AliveToThrive, which is my radio show page, and the link is there. Click the link, get the book, get a couple of extra ones for gifts for friends. It's a powerful story. It's going to really inspire and touch a lot of people. What's really cool, and not many authors can say this because I have a lot of authors on the show, but this book also comes along with a companion CD music that you can also get. We played the song at the beginning of the show, and we'll also play it at the end. And the song is called Alone in the Trenches as well. Talk about the song, Sarah. How did you write it? What else is on the CD? And how did tell us about the music.
The CD I did back in 2008, and it was a collaboration with David Kellogg, who is a great friend of mine's. And we co-wrote a song, "Alone in the Trenches," would be the single for the album that came out. And it's a very eclectic album, and it was the first time that I ever took the challenge of writing a song. And you know, pairing up with David Kellogg's from Drop Tone Records, it was just amazing because I had the opportunity to write. And so it's, you know, when you're writing about something that's very personal to you, it comes very easy. and having some a creative guy like David Kellogg, who is an amazing instrumentalist, we were able to collaborate and write this song and to write a bunch of other songs on my self-entitled album, Sarah. So
you've done, what, is this your third CD or your second CD?
This is my second CD. But yeah. I just signed a record deal with Music Plant Group out of Chicago, and it's an amazing organization. They've been around for 30 years, and it's actually a different genre that I'm going to be performing, and it's more dance music, and it's more techno music, and it's absolutely
fun.
Amazing. Georgie
Borgi
is. March. We are releasing it in March. The single will come out in March with Music Plant Records. It's going to be. I just got back from Chicago recording the single, and it is very powerful, and it's called Stronger, and it's going to it's incorporated with my life and what I'm doing today, doing the anti-bullying program, Hate in Any Form is Wrong, or what I also do. I go around the country and I speak on homophobia in sports. It's something that I'm very passionate about, and something that I want to bring up to the forefront. And so, Music Plant Group is we recorded this song, and then let me tell you, it is very, very powerful, and we're gonna take it by storm. It's going
to
be everywhere.
Can't wait to hear that.
Yeah,
well, we'll have to, when it's released, let us know, and we'll love to play it on the air here and get it out to all of my fans and other people around the country, because that's going to be exciting. Good for you.
Yeah,
excellent.
When I think about it, and Georgie Forgy is the owner of the company, and he's also a performer, and he goes around the world. He's written like 20 number one hits, so it's he wrote this song, and it's absolutely amazing, and I cannot wait for people to hear it, because it's gonna blow people away.
Sarah, you mentioned you go around the country speaking about homophobia in sports. What are some of the events you've spoken at? Conferences, workshops, those types of things, and what do you have coming up?
Well, I got. I have, when I came out, I was approached by Greater Talent Network. It's out of New York City. They're a speaking bureau agency. And they signed me on board. And they have been booking me around the country and going around and speaking on acceptance and tolerance. Well, at first it was tolerance, but then we changed it to acceptance. And it's, me going around the country speaking on homophobia in sports, telling my story. Schools, Fortune 500 companies, doing diversity training programs, and it's been absolutely rewarding and amazing. We're going to be launching another program called Hate in Any Form is Wrong, and it's something that I've been speaking about for the last decade. It's an anti-bullying program, but it also, there's various different genres that we can put underneath there, subtitles of hate. And it's absolutely, it's like I said, it's very passionate. I'm very passionate about it, and it's something that I really believe in. So I just got back from Williamstown, Massachusetts, where I was at Williamstown speaking, and the keynote speaker there. And let me tell you, it was just an amazing time just to be there and to educate people, to bring awareness to homophobia within the community, and just tell my story. And, it was what I love about it is the change that you can see in people's eyes. By the time you're done speaking, you see tears, it was just an amazing event. And that's my thing that I love to do. I go around the country and I educate people on the LGBT community, and it's very rewarding. So.
Well, and I did notice on the internet that you had spoken at PFLAG National, and I've had guests on my show just in the last few weeks from PFLAG, and
yes.
Wonderful organization for those of you listening that don't know what it is. PFLAG.org, a national organization with local chapters, helping parents, families, and friends with their own coming out process of having a friend or family member who's gay, because parents have to come out as well. And this is right. something I've been talking a lot about with people I know here in Missouri, because much like Minnesota, where you live, Sarah, mm-hmm. Here in the Midwest, things have, you know, we have a long way to go to catch up with the East and the West Coast on, yeah. on acceptance, tolerance, and equality. And I want to commend you for your work with Minnesotans United for Families, because yeah. I volunteered briefly on that campaign up in October. Mm-hmm. And what was your involvement with that campaign, and why was it important to you?
Well, it was very important to me. My involvement was going around and speaking and educating people on who we are as a community. And not only that, I mean, it's just one of the right to love someone, the right to be able to commit to someone, and I mean, it's absolutely, you know, it's something that we strive for. And, you know, and any time where, you know, there's a group that wants to discriminate or to another organization, you know, it's definitely wrong. So my involvement with it was to go around and just to educate people and you know, with Chris Cluey, that's as the Minnesota Viking punters, we did a bunch of fundraisers just to get the word out there. But one of the things that I did is I grew up Pentecostal, as we talked about earlier. I grew up Pentecostal Assembly of God, and so I talked to some of the churches. I also talked to some of the groups. Just bringing the awareness of what it's all about, and you know, and how what how this whole amendment thing would definitely be something that's very wrong, and not only in the eyes of God, but in the eyes of everyone around us in our community. So I went around and I spoke and did a bunch of just scriptures and, you know, getting it out there. And one of the things that I wanted to relay to people was that regardless of if you like the color of my hair or the color of my skin or who I love, I'm still a child of God. Also, I always say that, and one of the things is, so, you know, if God doesn't make any mistakes, then that must not be a mistake. Another thing is, you know, what we should not do is put our trust in the flesh, because the flesh will fail you, but put your trust in God, because he'll never fail you. And, you know, so I was out there just speaking on that part, but I think the last, what I left people with was this, you know, it's all, let's not judge, and don't judge unless thee be judged. Everyone knows that. But what people do not know is that further along, or they should know, it also says the measure you judge will be judged unto you. Meaning, so if you went up to go vote yes on my life, you'd be judging, you know, one of the JLBT communities, a person, then I would have to admit, I would have to think that God would judge you. So, I mean, it was one of those things where it was just something as simple as that, just to just bring awareness and to educate people that what they're doing was wrong, was very, like I said, very rewarding. And not only that, working with Chris Cluey and all these organizations up here, it was awesome. I think a lot of times where our community, the JLBT community, there were times where we were afraid of religion. But you know what? Those times have changed, because we can't be afraid of religion, because we can't be afraid of God's love, and
you have really said it there, because here in Missouri, there is an organization going city by city to get non-discrimination laws passed, and you know, it will take a very, very long time to continue going city by city. And some of the comments that come up at these city council meetings or county chamber meetings, county council meetings, you know, very hateful, very right. fueled by a twisted version of religion that is not right. like what you say, not the basic point that you make, which are so right. great. And so there is a new campaign that has started called Missourians for Equality, basically to get the question of non-discrimination in employment and housing on the statewide ballot in 2014. Because much like what we saw in Minnesota and mm-hmm. other states, it was a historic election in November,
yes.
where when taken to the people, the mood and the climate and the understanding and the knowledge has shifted dramatically in this country. We saw it
right.
in November. People didn't think that the issue in Minnesota would be pushed back, and it was. And it was, I think, primarily it was because the conversations were around love. They were
yeah.
positive. They took the campaign took the high road. I was there.
Mm-hmm.
I heard those conversations. I was
right.
blown away. I had never been part of a political campaign that was so positive, so filled with loving people from all walks of life. And the numbers proved to be with us on election day. And so here in Missouri, we hear sometimes people say, oh, this is too soon. You shouldn't take it to the vote. You shouldn't take
right.
it. A minority issue should never be voted on by the people. Oh, God, don't let anyone vote on this because it won't ever pass. But on the other hand, what we see, go ahead and respond to that.
No, one thing, I live in Minnesota. I've been here for 21 years, and, you know, it's all that Minnesota nice. And for me, I had, there was a lot of people that were worried about this. I had the opportunity to speak, I believe, 6 years ago. I went to our Senate here in Minnesota, and it was actually amazing because they wanted to put it on the ballot that time. For me, I had no doubt that it would pass. Number one, you know, we are living in different times, you know, and what we talked about earlier and how, you know, people are being held accountable from what they're saying, but also the positive images that our media is pouring out there. But also, it only takes so much that an organization or a person can hate on somebody else where the human heart will kick in. And the human heart will do the right thing. That's what happened in the civil rights movement. That's what happened in the women's movement. You know, there's only so much that you can hate on an individual or a human being or a child of God that, you know, where, you know, what's wrong, when they realize what they're doing is wrong, where the heart kicks in and it does the right thing. So I had no doubt that Minnesota, the people of Minnesota or the Minnesotans would come through for us. And you know, and like I told you, what we talked about earlier, you can't be afraid of religion. You know, the religion people or the right-wing religious fundamentalists have done a fantastic job of the fear factor, of creating this fear factor and being selective in their scriptures and how they would use that as a tool to scare people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's throw it back. Because I tell you what, I know a thing or two. And it's one of those
mm-hmm.
things, and like we talked about earlier, you may not like the color of my hair, my skin, or who I love, but I am a child of God. You know, we all stand before our Father on Judgment Day. And do you really want that to happen? Do you really want you standing before God? The only thing that is hindering you to walking into those pearly gates is that you discriminated against one of God's child. No,
so, Asnera, this is a good point to just ask you publicly, because I know
yeah.
privately that you have expressed support, but publicly, will you endorse the Missourians for Equality campaign, what we're doing here in Missouri?
Absolutely, yes, 100%. I will. I will support that.
Well, that's fantastic because we have a special guest that just called in. I noticed on the dashboard. We have a call on hold, and it's actually Aaron Malin, the founder and executive director of Missourians for Equality, and he would like to say something personally to you, Asnera. So, Aaron, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I just wanted to say thank you so much for your support and your very kind words. It really means the world to us, and it was very wonderful listening to your interview with Brenda today.
Aaron, I really appreciate you guys including me in this whole thing, and I am honored, and I am, you know, ready to do whatever it takes, you know. So thank you guys for having me. So I appreciate all of you.
Well, and I think the thing that's interesting that connects actually Aaron to Sarah on a very personal level, you know, Aaron witnessed bullying in middle school and in high school against his friends. And he witnessed it. It bothered him. It troubled him. He felt powerless to do anything about it because it was tolerated in the school system. As we saw what happens in Anoka School District in Minnesota, where the bullying gets so bad that 9 kids committed suicide in an 18-month period up there in Minnesota. Aaron, too, had witnessed and lost a friend to suicide. And he vowed that that would never happen again if he had anything to do about it. And he was going to combat hate and discrimination by doing something positive like this campaign.
Yes.
And Sarah, do you have any words of wisdom to share with Aaron or with the campaign about how to spread the message of non-discrimination, why it's wrong, and why people should get involved and care about this issue?
I mean, people should get involved because it's the right thing to do. One of the things and stuff right now I do not tolerate, and I don't think anyone should tolerate, is bullying. And that's why the program Hate in Any Form is Wrong was formed, because we're going to go out there and speak on this. And, you know, it doesn't have to get better, when we can just nip it at the bud. And, you know, right now, the thing that for myself or I cannot tolerate is an educator that does not care. So what we need to do is get in there and educate these faculty members, educate the parents, educate the community on what's happening around them with bullying. And, you know, we are, like you said, we are losing way too much children because of them feeling like there is no hope at all. So when you lose, when you strip hope from a child, when they feel like there's no hope. And, you know, the reason why it's personal to me, Brenda, is because I've been there. I've been on that ledge. I wanted to jump off. I've been there where I wanted to pull the trigger. So I understand where they're coming from, where if they feel like there's no hope. And what we need to do is all just to get in there and start educating these people about what's happening around them, and making sure that our children feel beautiful. Making sure every child in the U.S. feel beautiful, feel safe, and that this does not happen again. Of course, I mean, what helps is people stepping up to the plate, people realizing this stuff, that they can also make a difference by just saying something. That's what, you know, that's what we need to have the people, our society do, is to start speaking up and to have the people and authority figures to step up to the plate and make sure that none of this ever happens again. To educate the parents and making them realize and stuff what is really going on with their children. And I understand today's everyday life that goes on, how parents are busy. I think that's what the government, that's what Obama, we should start pouring our money into, and to educate to helping these single parent mothers or helping these families and stuff that really need the help, so they can pay attention to their children, so they can get back to the family values, to get back to this, where everyone understands or really, you know, they understand what their children are doing. So anyway.
And I like what you were saying about your outreach in Minnesota with communities of faith, because the Missourians for Equality is doing a lot of outreach with church groups as well. There was last month a concert for equality at a church. There'll be another one in February on the 24th. We're calling them Concerts for Equality. And they take place at faith communities, and they feature spiritually uplifting musicians. And we hope at some point, you know, we can figure out a date and time, as Sarah, for you to come to Missouri, because I think your call to action, first of all, your personal story will get people's attention. And then your call
to
action.
Can I say something? Before I lose the train of thought? You know, I was just talking to a good friend of mine, Mitchell Gold, who owns Mitchell Gold Furniture. He's also doing a lot of work with anti-bullying. what's amazing about, you know, what we talked about, which is what we need to get out there, that religion and how parents react to their children is a sign of bullying. And what we need to do is, like I said, that's why it's so important to us, for us to get in there and educate these parents and to educate the the community. Because what they don't realize, like for me, growing up in the Pentecostal Assembly of God and hearing all that negativity about who I truly was, that was a sign of bullying. That was a sign of me going, there are times, yes, going back and crying and praying to God that, you know, I want, you know, please change me, please change me. But then there was also a sign of, you know, where it's, it was a time where I went back, not cried, but wanted to kill myself. That is a sign of bullying. And what we need to do is bring awareness to all of that. That what they need to do is to focus on the child, focus on the community, and making it a safe environment, watching what you say. Because so how many, I deal with so many kids that when they come out to their parents, it's like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry if I said that or I did this. Or, you know, what we need to do is educate parents that, you know, they can't raise their child like that in such negativity. But what they need to do is just make sure it's, you know, I mean, you can tell if your child is gay or not. I mean, you definitely can. So, I believe we can. But it's one of those things where that's also a sign of bullying. We need to educate our parents and educate people in our community.
Even if, so given the situation, say there's a kid that comes out and his parents are accepting and supportive,
yeah.
And then that teenager goes out to get their first job and applies for a job, and the employer either knows or thinks or perceives that teenager to be gay and then denies them a job because of that they, you know, so again, it's kind of like the discrimination in employment is a form of bullying, would you say?
Yeah, definitely.
And so you have it in employment, you have it in housing, you have it in public accommodations. And so many people think it's, they don't realize that it's still legal. When we talk to people, they say, that's still legal? And we're like, yeah, it's still legal to fire someone because they're gay or to deny them housing.
It's the fear of the unknown. A lot of times when I go and speak, a lot of these kids are, you know, or people that I speak to, it's the fear of the unknown. They don't really understand, or they don't, you know, they've never heard it before. So it's very important that we get the message out there. It's very important, you know, that we, you know, we educate people around us on all aspects of life. You know?
And I think Aaron's still on the line before we wrap up the program, and we want to have Sarah sing us a song here at the end. Aaron, share with Sarah, how's it going with college campuses? You're seeing a lot of involvement with young people in this campaign and young people that are wanting to get involved. What's that been like, Aaron?
Oh, it's been incredible to see the amount of energy and enthusiasm young people really are bringing to this issue these days. I mean, there's just an incredibly motivated base of non-LGBT allies who feel very passionately about this issue, a lot of whom are rather young or are in college. And so we're seeing a lot of success in organizing at various college campuses all over the state. We're finding that all kinds of college students really want to work together and work to end discrimination in Missouri. They all see it as the right thing to do, so much so that they're willing to get involved. And so it's really been incredibly exciting to see that energy develop.
Aaron, I'm telling you, this is the new generation. They really don't care if I mean what I'm saying is they don't care and stuff that one of their fellow brothers or sisters are gay. This is such an amazing time. Like when I go and speak out, it's like you are the new generation. You will be the leaders of tomorrow. And I tell you, you're right. This just the support that we're getting from all of them, and how this is—it's just an amazing, exciting time, because we, they're going to help us move forward and change this world.
Absolutely.
And
you know,
Sarah, what do you say to older activists that have been sort of around for a while and are sort of living in their own fear, like you said, fear of religion, fear of combating those arguments? And just feeling tired with the fight, the ones that you know, what do you say to the activists that say, you know what, the time's not right, or we should wait, or, you know, we don't think, you know, that, again, that it's based on fear.
I gotta tell you, the time is never right, right? But the time is now. Just look around you, what you see in the media, how we're seeing a lot of our children, you know, taking their own lives, or, you know, how we're seeing so much negativity in this world. The time is now. You know, and I know, I mean, and one of the things, I mean, I've been doing this for, and I know I'm, you know, I guess the newbie. I've been just doing this for 13 years. But you can't, I mean, it's one of the things, this is life for me. This is what I'm going to be doing for the rest of my life. I just want, you know, this is until it gets, you know, until we, equality for all, this is what I'm going to be doing. And, I can't get tired of doing it. I can't get tired of going out there and educating people, because, you know what, it's for me, it's all about saving lives now. It's not about, it's personal. For me, it's personal now. So,
I love that.
I don't think, you know, from all the, you know, from all, like, my friends that are you know, that are in you know, that are out there speaking, it's like one of those things where, you know, you, I mean, there's still passionate about it. So you still, there's got to be passion about it, and because, you know, there's lives that need to be saved and lives that need to be changed. And, you know, I'm going to do,
perfect.
I mean, this is, like I said, this is life for me. This is what I'm going to do until I'm 6 feet under.
I love it. Well, that's a good place to wrap up the program, because we would like you to perform a song for us as we wrap up the show. Tell us the name of the song, and what will you be sharing?
Well, I'll be singing this acapulco, but, you know, a cappella. One of the songs that I always puts a smile to my face, and, you know, it's not on my album, but it's, you know, Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
So, oh, I love it.
So you tell me when, you just say hit it, and I guess I'll start singing.
All right. Well, we're going to say hit it, and thank you to our listeners for listening to Alive to Thrive. And this is Asera Tuwalo closing out the program with Somewhere Over the Rainbow. Thank you, Asera. We love you.
Love you guys, too. Thank you very much for having me on. Somewhere over the rainbow, way up high, there's a place that I dreamt of once in a lullaby. Somewhere over that rainbow, skies are blue, and the dreams that you dare to dream really do come true. Someday I'll wish upon a star and wake up where the clouds are far behind me. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And troubles smell like lemon drops high above the chimney top. That's where you find me. Somewhere over that rainbow, bluebirds fly, birds fly over the rainbow. While, oh, why can't I? Aloha. Thank you very much for having me on. I appreciate you.
Thank you so much. That was incredible and very beautiful. Brought tears to my eyes. And everyone, have a fantastic week. We'll see you back next Friday on Alive to Thrive. We're going to close out again with Alone in the Trenches.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've always been everything other than who I am. I don't want to lie and live another day in this. I want to risk it all to be true. Would you break my fall if I come through? I can't find the words I need to say. I'm having to hide behind the games I'm playing. I think of ways to make your home. With no use to cry. All my fears.